The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start with the headline on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal. Healthcare leaders leading the way. These professionals are making measurable and important changes in healthcare. And these are a series of question and answer columns that begin inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline to the special section, Healthcare Leadership Awards 2023. And there are 13 of these. We'll read the first two and then announce the rest of the winners to give you an idea of this section, and then come back at the end if there's more time. The first one is in the category of nurse, Peter Berry. What motivates you in your everyday work? Healthcare isn't easy, but knowing that the work I do helps people when they are most in need motivates me. It's important that my work is meaningful, and working in a hospital gives me the opportunity to help others. It feels like I'm fulfilling my purpose when I can lead my teams to help a patient navigate a complex situation. What are your chief responsibilities? As Associate Chief Nursing Officer, I work with Duke Raleigh's Critical Care, Emergency Services, and Medical Surgical Units. I guide the ways in which we deliver patient care and help keep the hospital operations running smoothly. My units cover the main areas of a patient's hospital experience. Therefore, I focus on developing innovations to create an environment where our teams feel they're doing their best job and our patients feel they have received the best care. Who was the most influential person in your professional life last year? Priscilla Ramser, interim CNE for Duke Health and a CNO for Duke Raleigh, has been a champion for aiding me in developing my career. She's an amazing mentor and has taught me to always say yes to a challenge because there's always a solution. She's a master at linking resources to help develop a new generation of leaders. How does your work impact the healthcare community? The trust a patient and their families place in us is a privilege. Since every patient's needs are unique, my work helps prepare hospital units to work together to provide the highest quality care. I also care about the needs of my team. Throughout my career, I've tried to identify and encourage others to become leaders. Seeing those I've encouraged to move into leadership positions has been rewarding. What trends are emerging in healthcare? As the Triangle continues its rapid population growth, meeting the demand for care is becoming increasingly challenging. We need to be innovative in providing education to the next generation wanting to enter healthcare and pivot to meet their needs in workplace safety, job satisfaction, and work-life balance. What do you like most about living in the Triangle? My family and I made a conscious decision to move to the Triangle nearly two decades ago because of the wealth of opportunities offered here. My move into the healthcare field is a direct result of the educational and work opportunities that were and continue to be available. What do you do to relax and have fun? When not at work, you can usually find me taking breaks, traveling with my family. Traveling takes many forms, from a short trip in our camper to taking an international trip off the beaten path. And also there's a small get-to-know-you section with the article. Company, Duke Raleigh Hospital. Residence, Clayton, age 52. Family, wife, Rebecca, son, Noah. Education, Doctor of Nursing Practice, East Carolina University. Master of Science in Nursing, Queen's University of Charlotte. Bachelor of Science Nursing, East Carolina University. And Associate's Degree, Johnston Community College. Our next winner is the diversity leader in healthcare, Audrea Caesar. Her company is UNC Health, UNC School of Medicine. Residence, Carrie, age 45. Family, husband John, daughter Quinn, son Ryan. Education, PhD, MSPH. What motivates you in your everyday work? I am motivated by my personal values of faith, family, community, and equity. My personal goal is to carve a path for my children and the next generation to achieve their highest potential in an equitable and inclusive environment. I'm a parent of a special needs child, and I know all too well the challenges that my child and other children face trying to navigate a system that doesn't include them. What are your chief responsibilities? The role of Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer is to lead the effort to embed equity across the healthcare system and the School of Medicine by creating a business strategy that outlines short and long-term goals and key organizational metrics. Who was the most influential person in your professional life? My professors, Drs. Burgess and Toms at North Carolina A&T State University, they inspired me years ago as a student to use my unique skills to lead and to trailblaze in difficult spaces. How does your work impact the healthcare community? I'm working to create a culture of equity that connects the work of faculty and learners in the School of Medicine with the healthcare system that emphasizes quality, equity, and inclusion for teammates, patients, and the community. What trends are emerging in healthcare? We're coming out of a pandemic facing a critical shortage of nurses and physicians, and in North Carolina specifically, we're experiencing massive population growth. Additionally, we now have five generations in the workplace, which can create barriers to inclusion and belonging. Healthcare organizations must be intentional about recruiting new RN graduates, as well as retaining doctors that complete their residencies within the UNC system. Why did you choose healthcare for a career? I believe healthcare chose me. My academic training is in public health, and I've always had a passion for serving my community in ways that improve the health and well-being of those who are underserved. I had worked in every facet of the social determinants of health except healthcare. After 20 years of public sector health and human services work, I made the shift to healthcare during a pandemic because I felt like the need was so great for someone to lead the way in prioritizing the work to decrease disparities and to create a welcoming environment for everyone. What do you do to relax and have fun? Relaxing and having fun seems like a distant memory as a mom of two kids under 10, but when I get a chance, I love going to the spa and reading books. I also enjoy walking on the greenways and on my treadmill. I will admit my guilty pleasure of watching Married at First Sight on Lifetime and also Abbott Elementary. And the rest of the winners we'll list off include Surgeon of the Year, Dr. Thomas D'Amico, Duke Thoracic Surgery, Nurse Nancy Eisenson, Watts College of Nursing, a Duke University Health System affiliate. Support Services Executive Organization, Ryan Gibson, the Carolina Center for ABA and Autism Therapy. Healthcare Manager, Uma Kalegnanam, with Duke Regional Hospital. Doctor of the Year, Dr. Micah Krempaski, WakeMed Health and Hospitals. Nurse, Jennifer Mack, UNC Health. Physician and Physician Practice Group, Dr. Satish Mathan, Raleigh Radiology. Healthcare Innovator, Researcher, Dr. Shankar Ramaswamy, Cryo Therapeutics. Board Member in Healthcare, Dr. James A. Smith III, Urban Ministries of Wake County. Physician and Physician Practice Group, Dr. Mira Udayakumar, UNC Health Rex. Support Services Executive Organization, Robert L. Wilson, Jr., Nelson Mullins Riley & Scarborough, LLP is his company. Healthcare Innovator and Researcher, Dr. David Alain Wall of the UNC School of Medicine. And that rounds out our list, and we'll come back to this if there's time at the end. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Big addition to Oberlin. A big development reshaping Raleigh's Oberlin neighborhood is on the rise. Construction on an upscale senior living community is advancing as part of a larger development involving Raleigh's Grub Ventures, Williams Realty and Building Company, and Clancy and Thays Construction Company. The site, now called Budley East, is the former Country Club Homes community. Hayes Barton Place is scheduled to open in 2024. The development from Liberty Senior Living sits next to Oberlin Magnet Middle School and will include state-of-the-art amenities and care facilities to go with a luxury lifestyle. Next to that, a mix of single-family homes, apartments, and cottage homes is planned, with residential construction scheduled to begin this year. Plans for the new community were unveiled in 2021, but it has been in the works for much longer. Grubb bought the 20.8-acre site between Oberlin Road and St. Mary Street in 2006 for $24 million, but the Great Recession forced the project to hit pause. Wilmington Brewery opened spot in Raleigh. New taps are officially flowing in Smoky Hollow. New Anthem Beer Project, a Wilmington brewery, has opened its Glenwood Annex Tap Room. The brewery announced its plans to open in the mixed-use development in downtown Raleigh in October. The spot began a soft opening this week and expects to be fully open soon. Its website lists 12 beers on tap and a variety of to-go cans available as well. The new Anthem Annex is located at 500 Northwest Street in Suite 150. It joins Midwood Smokehouse, Dose Yoga and Smoothie Bar, and Milk Lab as the tenants, currently open in Smoky Hollow. Several more spots are under construction or are coming soon. New Anthem Beer Project opened its first location in 2016 in a former livery stable at 116 Dock Street in Wilmington. A second location followed at 110 Greenfield Street. Triangle Duo opening school. A Wake Forest couple is opening a preschool in Northeast Raleigh after struggling to find high-quality early childhood education options in the area. Shelby and Brian Cackle of Wake Forest are opening three Lightbridge Academy locations in the Wake Forest and Raleigh areas. The Cackles signed to open a Lightbridge Academy at Franklin Street and Calvin Jones Highway and are planning to open two more locations. The Academy currently has two open locations in the Triangle, Holly Springs and Apex. The Cackles have experience in the pharmaceutical trial industry, but chose to open the preschool after seeing the limited options available for their daughter. Initially, the couple was going to open a preschool themselves, but then they discovered Lightbridge and opted to be franchise owners. Good night, back on top. $7.4 billion. That's the estimated wealth of SaaS co-founder and CEO Jim Goodnight in the 2023 edition of the Forbes Billionaires list, making him the richest person in North Carolina. Last year, Tim Sweeney, CEO of Carrie's Epic Games, was ahead of Goodnight on the list, but they've switched spots, with Sweeney's wealth now estimated at $4.7 billion, down from $7.4 billion last year. Goodnight's net wealth is up from $6.7 billion a year ago. Biotech firm's founders team up. Two co-founders of Precision Biosciences are teaming up again. Shortly after stepping away in February from the C-suite at Precision, Derek Jans joined a Durham-based startup. Jans is now the chief scientific officer at Tune Therapeutics, which was launched in late 2021 by Matt Cain, co-founder and former CEO of Precision. While at Precision, Jans led the development of the company's gene editing platforms and oversaw all of the company's research teams. In late February, Jans informed Precision of his intentions to step away, quote, to pursue other personal and professional interests, unquote. In a statement, Cain said Tune is eager to bring in Jans' scientific expertise as the startup advances its genetic tuning platform. Tune emerged in December 2021 with $40 million to try to expand the potential reach of genetic medicine. Cain and Jans founded Precision with Jeff Smith, who remains with the company, in the mid-2000s and grew the biotech into a publicly traded company. And finally, wages beginning to trend down. The nation's hiring binge is slowing down and wage growth may be next in line. Pay growth decelerated in March, falling to 6.9% year over year, which was down from 7.2% in February. The data from HR and payroll company ADP shows the figure has been trending down since October. In North Carolina, the year-over-year change in annual pay was 7.6% in March, with a median annual salary of $53,800 for workers who've stayed in their role for the past 12 months. The states with the highest rate of wage growth are Montana and Wyoming at around 10%, according to the report. And now we turn to some of the major news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Red Hat weighs future for its Raleigh office space. Written by Lauren Onosorge and Kaylee Thompson. Red Hat Tower has been a defining characteristic of the downtown Raleigh skyline for years, but while the Red Hat logo still hangs over East Davie Street, many of the workers that used to fill the building are now working from home. As tech firms across the country reevaluate their office footprints in an effort to control costs, could Red Hat Tower be the next to hit the market? Right now, the company, which has about 2,000 local employees, is not pursuing a sublease strategy for Red Hat Tower, a spokeswoman says. The building includes approximately 380,000 square feet of office and retail space and an integrated parking deck. The company entered into a sublease for the building at the end of 2011. The sublease expires in 2035. But that doesn't mean the way Red Hat operates in downtown Raleigh won't change, as remote work is now part of the new normal across the tech industry. We're constantly evaluating our workplace portfolio both locally and globally to ensure we understand the real estate market dynamics, managing the effective use of our real estate assets, says spokeswoman Stephanie Wunderlich. Any significant change could have a ripple effect across the entire region, as Red Hat has long been a leading tech employer. The company, now a subsidiary of IBM, is still embracing what Wunderlich describes as associate flexibility, which includes both hybrid and in-person work activities. COVID pushed much of the Triangle's tech workforce remote. At the end of 2020, the vacancy rate for Class A office space in downtown Raleigh was about 4.9%. Last year ended with a rate of more than 11.4%. Red Hat declined to say how many workers are regularly coming to its downtown office, but there are signs the company is rethinking how it utilizes its facilities downtown. Last year, Red Hat and the city amended an existing parking agreement, opting to extend it for just 1 year, according to city documents. The parking agreement now expires in July and allows Red Hat to access up to 1,200 monthly parking access cards within the nearby City Center Progress Energy parking decks and an additional 300 access cards in either the deck or a nearby city-owned parking deck. Wake Med to build two hospitals in Garner. Healthcare system plans to add a total of nearly 200 beds. This is written by Zach Ezone. Wake Med plans to build a healthcare campus in Garner that will house two hospitals recently approved by state regulators. The health system says it plans to build a 45-bed acute care hospital and a 150-bed mental health facility on 53 acres near White Oak Road and Timber Drive East. Wake Med says the campus will be part of a larger 220-acre mixed-use district that's being planned by the town of Garner and a developer. Wake Med plans to begin construction of the mental health facility in 2024, with its opening slated for the fall of 2026. The location of this facility has changed from what Wake Med initially proposed when unveiling its plans last year. At the time, Wake Med planned to build the facility in eastern Wake County. The health system had identified a roughly 34-acre parcel within the jurisdiction of Knightdale as a potential site, but town officials pushed back on the location. In a September letter to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, town manager Bill Summers outlined Knightdale's concerns for the site. Located near I-87 and I-540, town officials had identified the parcel in planning documents as an important gateway into Knightdale that's best suited for a mixed-use center to bring amenities to the largely residential area. Because the site is not zoned for a hospital, Wake Med would have needed to obtain an approving rezoning request from Knightdale Town Council, a request that could have been denied. Wake Med didn't say if the town's opposition to the site was a factor in its decision to shift the facility to Garner. However, in a statement, CEO Don Ginzig says that building both hospitals on one campus will further our mission of whole-person healthcare. We are designing the campus in such a way that things like utilities can be housed in a single plant, says Thomas Goh, Wake Med Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer. Food services, environmental services, materials processing and distribution, landscaping maintenance, and other services can be shared among the on-site facilities for potential cost savings, he says. The Department of Health and Human Services in January approved Wake Med's applications for both facilities. However, several other healthcare providers have appealed the department's approval of the acute care facility. Wake Med in August submitted an application to develop the acute care facility, estimated to cost $214 million, by relocating 22 beds from its Raleigh campus and adding no more than 9 new beds. As part of the project, Wake Med plans to move its existing emergency department from its Garner Healthplex into the new facility, doubling its size from 12 to 24 beds. Golden Corral to test new restaurant concept. Raleigh-based chain opening new look eatery in old Chick-fil-A spot. This is written by Evan Hoopfer. Golden Corral is getting ready to test a new concept with a pilot location in Southern Pines. The Raleigh-based restaurant chain is planning to open a location called Homeward Kitchen at 10735 U.S. Highway 15501, which previously was home to a Chick-fil-A, according to an application submitted to the town of Southern Pines. The town council was scheduled to discuss the proposal during its April 11 meeting. Homeward Kitchen is a new drive-through and dine-in fast food dining project offering Southern comfort foods to be piloted in Southern Pines, according to the applicants, says a staff report. The infill development proposed will include modifications to the 4,233 square feet of commercial space, one drive-through lane, and an enclosed dumpster and storage area. Golden Corral is looking to receive an architectural compliance permit from Southern Pines. The company declined to comment for this story. Last year, Triangle Business Journal reported on Golden Corral's intentions to diversify from the buffet concept it's become famous for in light of changes to the restaurant industry following the pandemic. COVID did expose the soft underbelly of Golden Corral that we're kind of a one-trick pony with buffets, CEO Lance Trenery said at the time. We're great at it and we're the only ones to survive nationally, but we also have these two new innovation projects that can accelerate our growth. Trenery said that the company was working on two new prototypes, a fast casual restaurant and a full-service steakhouse. He said the fast casual restaurants will feature Golden Corral's signature items like fried chicken, meatloaf, and pot roast. I still see a model where we can have 500 buffets in the country again, he said last year. With the fast casual version and the value steakhouse, we have the opportunity to reach 1,000 units over the next 10 to 12 years. And our next article is written by Lauren Onasorge. CEO steps aside at Durham's WorkDove. The Triangle startup scene has one fewer female founding CEO, as seasoned entrepreneur Melissa Philippi has left WorkDove, the company she founded and brought to Durham. Philippi recently shared that she's left the human resources software company she spent 8 years building, in part to spend more time with her family. As co-founder and CEO, this isn't easy, and there's never a perfect time for this transition, she posted on LinkedIn. Philippi told her LinkedIn followers she was moving on in order to spend more time with my family and pursue other opportunities. Stepping away from the baby you've birthed is indeed hard to do, but when that baby is now in high school and left in excellent hands, she said about WorkDove. In her stead, Sean Fitzgerald, previously COO, has taken on the CEO seat. Fitzgerald says that the company, coming off its highest net revenue retention in 2 years, was on an upswing and he was excited to get started. Priority number one as he enters the job is listening to customers. He has led companies before. Previously, he was the CEO of Savvy, which was acquired by HAS Technology. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Startups and Finance page written by Lauren Onasorge. Teaming up to boost baby formula. Accidental, Greenville entrepreneur, wants to empower new parents. Sure. S-U-R-E! Exclamation point. A startup with a plant-based formula is the brainchild of self-described accidental entrepreneur April Kelly. Kelly, who is based in Greenville, started her entrepreneurship journey 4 years ago when the third of her four children was born, a baby girl with a tongue tie. Kelly soon learned that unlike her two previous children, breastfeeding would be a challenge this time, a painful one. So as an alternative, Kelly sought out a plant-based formula. But the soy-based one she found caused an allergic reaction, sending her into research mode to find out what actually goes into formula. She saw things like corn syrup and yucky fillers, so she and her husband had a conversation. What if we can create our own plant-based formula that still provides complete nutrition from a plant-based perspective that is safe for our daughter? Kelly says. Within days, her kitchen was turned into a chemistry lab. The resulting concoction got a green light from her pediatrician. Still, Kelly wasn't planning on starting a business. Kelly formulated everything she was feeling and created a video to share her story on an online forum. I was very transparent about my struggles, she says. We started to get blown away with just feedback. Moms were sending her messages. We went through the same thing. Can we have your recipe? That really is what tickled the entrepreneur in me, Kelly says. So she got to work. The regulatory landscape is tricky, so as the firm starts clinical testing on an infant-grade formula, expected to start later this year, it's prepping to launch a toddler-focused nutritional beverage first. The plant-based milk launches next month. Up next, pending regulatory hurdles, will be formula. That will be followed by a dissolvable formula tablet, currently in the research and development phase. Scott Wingo's Tweener Fund, now at 58 companies and counting. Scott Wingo's entrepreneur-backed Triangle Tweener Fund is racing toward having 60 companies in its portfolio. The firm, founded by serial entrepreneur Wingo, Spiffy and Channel Advisor, announced recently that it invested $675,000 in the first quarter and added 10 new companies and added two follow-on investments. The Tweener Fund now has 58 companies in its portfolio. Nine of those new investments were in what Wingo classifies as tweener investments, firms with more than $1 million in revenue or 10 or more employees. Beep, here's Taylor Swift's new single. The idea started in 2014 at Carrboro High School. Jake Zinn, a Chapel Hill native, said the concept that would become Beeper Incorporated was simple, and that's spelled B-E-E-P-R, Incorporated. I wanted information that I'd love to come to me without me having to scroll and search through social media and the internet, he says. The idea stayed in the back of his head after graduation and while he attended the College of Charleston for arts management. Zinn started building the app in 2018. The result was an app that provides instant alerts, or beeps, for new music from your favorite artists. Real validation came in the form of Techstars, an entrepreneurship accelerator that picked Beeper as one of 10 music startups for its program. Today, the app has more than 300,000 registered users. 26-year-old Carrie Tech firm acquired. After months of conversations and flights to and from Kansas City, Cary-based Eyeglass is being acquired by 20 South Partners. Financial details were not disclosed. Eyeglass, founded in 1997, delivers network operations center services to customers in broadband, healthcare, IT, and financial services. The company's broad variety of clientele is part of what attracted the buyer, says Jeff Neblett, CEO of both Kansas-based 20 South Partners and its portfolio firm, ISPN Network Services. No layoffs will happen as a result of the deal, he says. Eyeglass is hiring, he adds. We're trying to hire more network operations technicians here and continue to grow the company. And finally, couple embark on home decor app. Accenture vets build Durham startup for DIYers. The couple behind Durham-based Bristles, an app targeted for DIYers, had no idea what they were creating when they were fiddling around with AI models in 2021 in the midst of a global pandemic. Today, they're scoring investments and endorsements from seasoned startup veterans as they build out an app that, if they're right, could help you know which paint color to buy without having to do multiple test rolls all over your wall. Tang followed fiancé Anthony Aller's footsteps. He left Accenture to pursue a doctorate at Duke and went back to school full-time, starting a master's program at her alma mater, the University of Virginia. There, she found a passion for machine learning and AI that would push her to start Bristles. Playing around with AI models to colorize images was how it started, a mobile app translating a variety of images through models, sort of a mix of AI and Photoshop, was the result. And by the way, her name is Tina Tang. Tang and Aller had been remodeling their home, and an argument surfaced about paint colors in an area where they planned built-in shelves. The first thing they did with their new app was test out their ideas for the space. And Anthony was right. Darker colors actually look better, she says, but we couldn't get there without that visual. So they took the concept and created a company. Now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. Brunswick County, 7th fastest growing in U.S. Census numbers reveal push toward coastal living. Brunswick County is not just the fastest growing county in North Carolina, it's one of the fastest growing counties in the entire country. That's according to new population estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau, which offers snapshots of what the country's population looked like as of July 1, 2022. The data shows that there's a huge push toward the North Carolina coast, particularly around the Wilmington area. The standout of that group is Brunswick County, which grew by 5.7% between 2021 and 2022. That ranked number one in North Carolina and number seven in the U.S. In raw terms, the county's population has risen from about 145,000 in 2021 to 153,000 last year. The county's boom since the start of the pandemic is even more eye-opening. Brunswick County has increased its population by 16,000 people, or by 12%, since 2020. The allure of the county, long known for its beautiful beaches, was elevated drastically during the pandemic, says Susan Freeman, executive director of the Brunswick County Chamber of Commerce. During COVID, when a lot of states were locked down and areas had restrictions, Brunswick County was open for business, Freeman says. There's one key demographic fueling the growth in Brunswick County. retirees. The county has always been a haven for retirees, as 33% of its population is comprised of people 65 and over. That's double the state average. Brunswick County benefits from being near Wilmington and Myrtle Beach, says Michael Klein, the state demographer for North Carolina. There is some growth attributed to suburban development outside of Wilmington, Leland, and Navassa, but most of the growth is driven by being a retirement destination, particularly along the coast and on the southern end of the county. Floating Aqua Lodges RV Resort rejected. Lee County commissioners have rejected plans for an RV resort outside Sanford that would have included floating aqua lodges. The proposed 57-acre resort referred to Swanee Lake RV Resort in an application submitted to the county would have provided 80 RV hookups and 12 floating cabins on Morris Pond. Developers wanted to build the resort along Swan Station Road. The site sits about 15 minutes south of downtown Sanford. The proposal encountered fierce opposition from local residents who worried about the possible transient population that would stay at the resort and whether the campground would become pseudo-low-income housing. When the commissioners voted to deny the rezoning request, many in the audience applauded the decision. Two schools for sale north of Raleigh. Two former schools in Vance County are up for sale. As the county looks to shed surplus real estate and turn them into apartments, a small college, or something else, the details: Western Vance High School at 2785 Poplar Creek Road in Henderson, built in 1923, two stories consisting of 38,000 square feet, assessed value of $343,000. And Eaton Johnson Middle School at 500 North Beckford Drive in Henderson, built in 1949, two stories consisting of 32,000 square feet, assessed value of $8.5 million. Now we turn to the On Retail Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromette. Fenton and Carey adds new stores, more art. The mixed-use project continues to attract national interest. Fenton, the major project by Hines and Columbia Development, is adding three new outfits to its growing list of retail offerings. Rejuvenation, Nail Kitchen, and Face Foundry will join the 92-acre mixed-use development. Fenton is also adding upgrades to its public art. Photographer Anson Seal, local muralist Taylor White, and students from the NC State University Wilson College of Textiles will provide new pieces. Rejuvenation will open its first North Carolina store in Fenton. The brand is owned by Williams Sonoma and is a premier provider of customizable lighting, cabinet hardware, and furniture. Williams Sonoma already has a retail store open in Fenton. The new store will span 7,500 square feet and is set to open this year. Face Foundry is a skincare and facial bar. The franchise company does not currently have any open locations in North Carolina, but its website lists a Charlotte location as coming soon. The Fenton store will be about 1,400 square feet and is scheduled to open this summer. Offerings include 40-minute facials starting at $45, as well as lash, brow, and skincare services. The company has 17 stores now open in the U.S., with more than 50 in the works. Nail Kitchen, a luxury nail parlor brand, will open in a 3,000-square-foot box this fall. Fenton will be the second location for the brand, with one location currently in Raleigh's Midtown East Shopping District. The nail salon is known for offering craft cocktails and wines, as well as various services and treatment. Fenton already has large murals by prominent artists Louise Jones and Kelsey Montaigne, and more artwork is being added. Anson Seal, a Texas-based artist, has created an interactive light installation along with digital ambiance for Fenton. Taylor White, the Raleigh artist behind several of the Triangle's popular murals, is working with Marjorie Hodges of Art Suite to paint mini murals on Fenton's floors. Also on display will be fashion designs by three NC State students. Dominic Selleman, Walker Perry, and Reagan Kurtz will have their concepts in a walkway in the development. Raleigh joins Korean fried chicken craze. A restaurant brand known for being at the forefront of the craze over Korean fried chicken just launched a Raleigh restaurant. Bonchon, spelled B-O-N-C-H-O-N, is now opened at 6320 Capitol Boulevard. The chain started in South Korea in 2002 and has spread across the U.S. in recent years, amassing more than 120 franchise locations. The Raleigh restaurant is located in the Plantation Square Shopping Center along Capitol Boulevard. Plantation Square backs up to an ABC store and a Hilton Garden Inn hotel. Bonchon opened its first Triangle location on Chapel Hill's Franklin Street in 2018. The brand has three other North Carolina locations, Charlotte, Pineville, and Greensboro. The new restaurant measures around 3,000 square feet. Jisha Sang and James Wang are the location's owners and operators. The Chapel Hill Bonchon is under separate ownership. And finally, downtown Raleigh has a new bookstore. A new bookstore is coming to downtown Raleigh. Liberation Station Bookstore will be opening at 208 Fayetteville Street this June. Owned by Victoria Scott Miller, the independent bookstore is family-led and a black-owned business. The concept was inspired by her family's struggle to find children's books by black authors and illustrators that featured people of color as characters. Scott Miller, along with her husband, Dwayne Miller, and their sons, Langston and Emerson, began the Liberation Station Bookstore brand in 2019 as a pop-up shop. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Education page, written by Zach Ezone. Pro Pharma charts robust hiring growth. Raleigh scores HQ relocation as pharma leaves Kansas. A life sciences company with thousands of employees globally has moved its headquarters to Raleigh. Previously based in Kansas, Pro Pharma Group has set up its main office on West Hargett Street downtown. The company, which already has about 100 local employees, expects to add another 75 to 100 people locally over the next few years. Founded about 20 years ago in the Kansas City area as a consulting firm, Pro Pharma has grown organically and through mergers and acquisitions to a global organization with about 2,600 employees, says President Jason DeGose. As it has grown, the company has found a number of its clients and members of its workforce coming out of the Triangle area, giving its prominence as a hub for the sorts of regulatory, clinical, and compliance services that Pro Pharma provides. When the company began discussing a headquarters relocation about a year ago, the organization looked at a few options but identified Raleigh as the best fit. We saw not only the natural growth in our workforce that had already occurred in Raleigh, but really as we looked to build certain parts of the organization, this was a great natural talent pool and hub, DeGose says. Pro Pharma is entering the market with a concentration of life sciences contracting and consulting companies like ICVIA and Syneos Health. Moving into this sort of market was a pull for Pro Pharma, as DeGose says that the company has had experiences hiring employees from larger contract research organizations. Pro Pharma's focus on regulatory and compliance services differentiates it from CROs that may serve a similar client base, DeGose says. For CROs, clinical trials are often the centerpieces of the business, with regulatory and safety services supporting these trials. Pro Pharma, which builds itself as a research consulting organization, instead added clinical trial services to its already established regulatory and compliance offerings with its merger with the Planet Group in 2021. The clinical research services were kind of the last piece of the puzzle, DeGose says. Pro Pharma specializes in working with small and mid-sized pharma companies and biotechs. The company found that the needs of these organizations haven't always been met by CROs that have built out models more suited for large pharma companies. The company has grown to more than 2,000 clients globally. The growth over the last few years has been supported by the private equity firm Odyssey Investment Partners, which acquired Pro Pharma in 2020. Duke Prof's startup sells assets to Boston outfit. A public company in Boston has acquired the assets of a gene therapy startup headquartered in Research Triangle Park. Ginkgo Bioworks bought Stride Bio's discovery and engineering platform as well as a lead preclinical asset. In a statement, co-founder Aravind Asokan said that the deal could enable the platform to be further deployed in the gene therapy industry. Ginkgo notes in its announcement that the acquisition focuses on Stride Bio's intellectual property and does not include any real estate. Additionally, Ginkgo is picking up one employee from Stride Bio who will join the company's mammalian engineering team. Financial details of the deal were not disclosed. The deal with Ginkgo comes about 2 years after Stride Bio completed its last raise, an $81.5 million Series B round. That year, the company finished building out a 6,700 square foot manufacturing facility, adding to about 15,000 square feet of lab and office space at its RTP headquarters. Stride Bio at that time also reached a headcount of 100 employees. And finally, Firm goes from cattle to people. After years of developing diagnostic systems for cattle, a Morrisville company wants to do the same for people. Advanced Animal Diagnostics has formed a subsidiary, Ad Astra Diagnostics, to develop a rapid hematology system that's intended to quickly provide measures of disease and infection in people. The company in March filed for regulatory approval of the device called Q-Scout RLD through the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Through its FDA submission, the company is aiming to get the system approved for use in identifying severe infection, including sepsis, in clinical and point-of-care settings. And our final reporter page is Kaylee Thompson's on real estate. Credit crunch starts to hit local projects. Raleigh's development pipeline shrinks. With financial markets tightening and access to capital getting tougher, real estate companies are finding it difficult to get projects off the ground. In addition, current economic conditions are causing many developers to rethink their strategies. The result is a slowdown in the number of new projects making their way through the approval process. The city of Raleigh has seen a decline in new rezoning requests as well as site and subdivision plans. The numbers are down about 10 to 20% compared to previous years, according to Patrick Young, the city's director of planning and development. Brian Reed, Triangle president for Town Bank, says the regional bank has also seen a slowdown in loan applications for real estate projects. Last year was a very robust year for everybody in banking, so comparatively it's at least 50% down. It's not more in other categories like office, if not more in other categories like office space, Reed says. In Raleigh, the first quarter of 2023 saw 17 new rezoning requests filed with the city. That's down from 25 for the same period in 2022. For the whole year, it was 94, with the most 32 coming in quarter two. Young says that this can be attributed to the economic conditions where interest rates and construction costs are high, and the office market is weak due to the remote work reshaping how companies use office space. There were a total of 212 site and subdivision plans filed in Raleigh in 2022, averaging 53 a quarter. Only 41 site and subdivision plans have been filed so far in 2023. New apartments going up at shopping center. Plans to redevelop a shopping center off Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh are moving forward with new apartments in the works. Kimco Realty of New York has filed new site plans for Pleasant Valley Promenade Apartments, a 372-unit apartment complex with a parking deck. The new development would sit directly behind the shopping center it's named for and reflects how real estate investors and developers are seeking new uses for traditional shopping centers amid the changing dynamics of the retail industry. Kimco received rezoning approval for up to five stories in 2022 with the goal of adding a multifamily component to the retail center. Site plans show the building that's currently used for the immersive Van Gogh experience, it was previously a fitness center prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, will be demolished. And finally, Durham's Gerlitz eyes new townhomes. Chapel Hill is getting a new townhome development as real estate investors continue to bet on the growing community. Durham architect Richard Gerlitz is developing Homestead Road townhomes on Homestead Road near the Carolina North Forest and Homestead Park. Gerlitz is preparing the site for 119 lots with the plan to sell the lots to builder TriPoint Homes. The townhomes will be a mix of two and three bedrooms with one and two car garages. TriPoint Homes land acquisition director Amanda Hoyle says each home will have an EV plug-in in the garage, all electric appliances, and the ability for future solar panel hookups. Site plans show 16 units will be designated as affordable housing. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Dreamville offers far more than music for Raleigh. In the mid-1980s, the city of Austin, Texas, was fighting two major headwinds that could have defined the future of the Texas capital. Had an alternative newspaper named the Austin Chronicle and a few influential people in the music business not crafted an audacious plan to jumpstart the swagger, Austin was fast losing. Texas was going through a full-blown banking crisis. Austin City Limits, the longest-running music show on TV, was teetering financially, and young people in a growing and very progressive city were yearning for a new form of arts and entertainment. In 1987, South by Southwest Music Festival was born, known today simply as SXSW. As most of the readers of this column know, SXSW has grown to be a phenomenon and a flag bearer to the creative class for people all across the world. Today, South by Southwest draws more than 200,000 people for its music festival and almost 50,000 for its conferences that run across several industries. There are 1,500 conference sessions and almost 2,400 credentialed press. In other words, it is easily one of the largest of its kind in the world. But it started small, with a vision from a few people and the support from a few influencers. Raleigh's Dreamville Festival just ended a few days ago, and while numbers are not confirmed, festival organizers estimate that there were about 50,000 people each day for the two-day fest of hip-hop and rap headlined by Usher, Drake, Lil Wayne, and festival host J. Cole, a Fayetteville native. My friend, who is an editor with the Wall Street Journal in New York, came down to meet her friends who flew in from California. After the event, on her way back to New York, she texted me stating, "The music festival easily had the best vibe, positive and happy people, of any concert she can remember. However, I am not sure why people were happily paying $18 for a cocktail, $40 if you asked for a double. Tickets were about $300, and the festival probably grossed more than $10 million, excluding merchandise sales. Dreamville organizers paid Raleigh less than $100,000, and Raleigh, in turn, agreed to fix the grass on the Dix property following the festival. City boosters estimate Dreamville's economic impact to be about $7.8 million on the area. The same people forecasted the National Hockey League's stadium series that took place earlier this year had an economic impact of $20 million. I find both numbers very hard to believe. Given the anecdotal evidence, I'm thinking more than 80% of the festival attendance was from out of town, and they spent thousands of dollars staying at hotels, buying food, renting cars, and visiting shopping centers. Spectators attending the unbelievably exciting and fun hockey game on that January night were predominantly local. You do the math. For Raleigh, this is far beyond dollars and cents. Our city leaders and the business community must see the advantage of working with J. Cole and his team to expand the tent beyond just music. I envision, just like South by Southwest, having business conferences, movie screenings, art exhibitions with the creative class makeup coming from people of color. We make a statement with the younger generation. Raleigh grabs the baton of being serious about diversity and inclusion, and people of all colors enjoying the journey to the future. It may look far-fetched right now, but so did South by Southwest back in 1987. And now we'll read the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one is $3 million. The amount Duke Energy spent on 67.9 acres near the Chatham-Siler City Advanced Manufacturing, or CAM, megasite. The next one, $3.6 million. That's the listed price tag on a Chapel Hill restaurant, Mama Dips, a 50-year-old institution on Rosemary Street, is up for sale. The building, built in 1998, is 4,226 square feet on 0.68 acres. The property's assessed value is $1.65 million, according to Orange County Property Records. Our next big number is $39 million. That's how much a jury in Colorado has decided the pharmaceutical company Sandoz should pay Duke University and another company, Allergan, for patent infringement. And finally, $93.3 million. That's how much Westbrook Partners, a Florida-based real estate investment management company, paid for the Broadstone Oak City Apartments. The company paid Alliance Residential Company about $278,000 per unit at the 2911 Mid-Century Drive location in Raleigh. And now we'll read the He Said It and She Said It quotes sections sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one is Sanford Mayor Pro Tem Charles Taylor. Before he voted to reject a rezoning from D.R. Horton that would have resulted in 600 new homes, Taylor expressed frustration D.R. Horton was proposing to build its express product intended for first-time home buyers in the development. If we want to accept a cheaper product coming here, guess what? Sanford is going to have the connotation of being a cheaper town. And next is Georgios Bakatsias, On opening a new restaurant in Wilmington, the spot is replacing Port City Chop House and will be a luxury brand steakhouse. We are looking forward to offering the highest level of service and ingredients for the entire community to enjoy, young professionals, established Wilmington community, and visitors alike. Next, we have Shaw University President Paulette Dillard on the university's request to rezone much of its campus in downtown Raleigh to enable potential development opportunities. There are a number of infrastructure upgrades that are absolutely necessary for Shaw University to continue to be able to recruit, retain, educate, and graduate students career ready. This rezoning plan is the first step in that initiative. And finally, we have a quote from David Berger, Duke University Professor of Economics. You build new buildings when the benefits of buildings are greater than the costs. Higher interest rates lower the benefits. Now all the future rents are worth less than before because of discounting and increase the costs, more costly to borrow to finance the building. As a result, after rates go up, there is less building. And now we turn to the executive voice question and answer column to read about Kendra Johnson. The headline: she fights for equality in North Carolina's workforce. Kendra Johnson is combating race gender issues as executive director of Equality NC. Interview by Lauren Onisorge. Kendra Johnson does not see herself as a controversial figure. Almost 5 years into her tenure as the executive director of Equality North Carolina, the largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights advocacy group in the state, she sees herself as a change maker, and there is plenty at stake. At issue for businesses, the future of North Carolina's economic competitiveness, she says. Companies from Apple to Google have to believe they can fill the jobs before making expansion pledges. Businesses cannot have a scenario in which employees lose rights as they cross zip codes, Johnson says. Folks have to know that North Carolina is a state that honors and respects differences, because otherwise, the employees that they need, the workforce they need, they will not make North Carolina their residence. As she and her group work to advocate and sell that message, they're also encouraging other business leaders to speak out in the same way that CEOs might advocate for issues impacting their respective businesses, from labor laws to sports betting, Johnson says. They have to also be lobbying for the civil rights of their workforce. And Johnson is making a difference. When she joined Equality NC in 2018, the nonprofit inked $312,497 in revenue. As of 2020, it pulled in more than $887,000, according to the IRS, with nearly all of it coming from donations. Johnson, a native of Little Rock, Arkansas, was once a financial journalist in Brazil, covering markets and globalization. But a childhood of volunteering sparked by growing up in Catholic schools inspired a commitment to service from an early age. Johnson's mother, a professor, wore a slew of hats, from volunteering with her church to running community gardens to helping the elderly. And she made sure her daughter, too, felt that pull, encouraging everything from soup kitchen work to volunteering at domestic violence shelters. The pull was strong enough to bring her back to the United States. Johnson has started her tenure in Brazil through a study abroad program. She did some translation work for banks and ended up working in a newsroom, overseeing English language publications sent to investors in the U.S. Brazil was going through major changes, moving toward globalization, and Johnson had a front row seat watching the impact of economic stabilization programs. But the draw toward community service was strong, and in 2014, she took on the role of state director for the Human Rights Campaign of Arkansas. Johnson, a member of the LGBTQ community, saw firsthand what she perceived as the civil rights issue of today's generation, the rise of anti-LGBTQ rhetoric. So her advocacy became a career, first with the Human Rights Campaign in Arkansas. What attracted me to the work of Equality was, number one, I'm a directly impacted person, she says. Moving into this sector, it felt like the right time. Johnson says the impact is what has attracted her to advocacy. She has worked on anti-hunger campaigns. She had volunteered for HIV and AIDS groups. She worked on the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. And through it all, the dramatic impact Johnson saw the work having on people's quality of life was what kept her moving. With LGBTQ advocacy, it was extremely personal. She moved to North Carolina in May 2018 for the role at Equality NC. At the time, House Bill 2 was fresh on the minds of advocates and economic developers. The controversial measure had made headlines in North Carolina as a number of companies pulled out of job commitments, unwilling to invest in a state they saw as discriminatory. Johnson had followed the issue from Arkansas. There she had been negotiating with legislators who had considered similar measures. They would say, we don't want to have a North Carolina problem, so how can we work on this, she says. And with this, there's also a section called 10 Questions with Kendra Johnson. 1, go to vacation spot, the beach. 2, what's something about you that might surprise your colleagues? I am fluent in Portuguese and have a knack for randomly finding other Portuguese speakers in the most surprising places. When you were 8 years old, what did you want to be when you grew up? A nun. What's the best piece of advice you ever received? Haters are gonna hate. What's your favorite spot for a business lunch? The Durham Hotel. What book should every business leader read? The Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes. What's your proudest professional achievement so far? Leading the movement to pass 22 non-discrimination ordinances. What's been your biggest professional hurdle so far? Constantly being discounted because of race and gender. What's the biggest mistake you see leaders making as they're crafting their corporate diversity programs? Misunderstanding that DEIB is a journey rather than a destination, and that requires constantly recalibrating your roadmap and course correcting along the way. And finally, what's your personal motto? Trust your gut. And in a closer look section, concerning Kendra Johnson, age 51, education, BA, history, Spelman College, master's in public administration, University of Arkansas, Little Rock, hometown, Little Rock, Arkansas, family, partner, 2 daughters, first job, gopher for Arkansas Attorney General's office. And in our final minutes with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the Business Pulse survey question. The question for this edition, are the Triangle's small towns losing their charm due to rapid growth? The total number of responses was 265. 37% say there can be an even balance. 33% say, yes, the growth is too much. And 30% say, growth is good. And one quick final note from Kaylee Thompson. Blue Ridge Corridor gets $100 million project. Longtime hotel in Raleigh's Blue Ridge Corridor set to be replaced with a luxury apartment project aimed at graduate students and professionals. Dallas-based Trinzic Residential Group recently filed new site plans for Aura Blue Ridge. The property at 1520 Blue Ridge Road currently holds a Ramada by Wyndham, which will be demolished. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.